F2A. Number 4B.
So, this would mean, you see, that we would culture in this way Romans, and that would help us really to go along categorical thinking. We would start with the Word of God, then the Christ translation, in order to come to Christianity, to the Son of Man, to the Son of God. This, I feel, is naturally something that we have been teaching over the last 50 years or so, because the Holy City, John Dolly has been teaching at the beginning of the 1940s, and we learned it, yes, that foresight, the city is the Word, the Christ, Christianity, and science, and we are repeating it like a parrot. But have we really entertained the atmosphere of it? That whole atmosphere that goes out from the Word, and then this important atmosphere of seeing that through the grace of God, really the Christ is working within ourselves and by itself, and is working through the grace of God as a gift towards men, and that we just have to see that we are the recipient of that blessing. Then that would be the cornerstone of the whole Christianity matrix and concept. We see that Christianity builds on the Christ and not on the Word, so that the Romans is shown in the Christ order. Then we come to 1 Corinthians, quite a different proposition. What must Corinthians show us? That's another question. We see here that Corinthians is the point of intersection of the grace of God that wants to bring out the true man, but that it only is brought out through the horizontal, namely by claiming for ourselves that new faith. And if we claim really that new faith, that begins to do something, namely that it begins to transform us, to resurrect us. Yes. Can you hear the tone of the Christ in Christian Science? Claiming is a tone of the Christ. We make ourselves one with the new faith. It's the atonement with God. It's the atonement with the new faith. And that brings always a revolution within ourselves, that it begins to bring a crisis within ourselves, and finally something new is being born. We are a new man, and that's what Corinthians wants to show. Corinthians wants to show that if we claim that new faith, that naturally also we must sacrifice or crucify the old faith. We cannot accept the new without letting go of the old. So he speaks a lot about crucifying the old style of life. I think 1 Corinthians shows, in my terms, the new style of life that man receives through that Christ translation. That through that Christ translation in Romans, something is beginning to change within ourselves, something is to be turned over in ourselves, and we are no more leading the same mode of life or style of life as before, but we are then experiencing that a new style of life, a new attitude of life is being born within us. So, quite different, really, than the Romans, 1 Corinthians will constantly show that we have to sacrifice something, namely the old man, and in order to be able to put on the new man. So that without that willingness to lay down the old paradigm, we never really can get the new paradigm. Or else we are constantly in danger that we mix the old paradigm with the new paradigm, and park the old into the new. And you know that that is the danger everywhere. The danger everywhere is that when a new idea comes up, especially in religion or in a spiritual movement, that people come with their old concept. They see the new, but they don't want to let go of the old. And therefore, they try to put the old into the new. That always has happened everywhere where Christianity was introduced in Gentile nations, that the heathen gods and heathen rituals were taken over into Christianity, and today we still have a lot of heathen symbols in Christianity. The Christmas tree, see, that's a heathen symbol, but there's nothing to do with Christianity, and so on, and so on. And that is what Paul could see, that he asked us really in 1 Corinthians that we should be willing to crucify our old style of life in order to experience a new way of life, a new mode of life. So the result of it is that he shows that if we do that, that then grace will give us a new mode of life. It resurrects us above the insufficiency, so to say, of the human sense of life. Now, we would like that too. But when one analyzes our thought and desires, for the great part we can find out that we like to park the old into the new. That we like to have the old style of life which pleased us also in the new style of life. That we would like to do. All that we liked in the old style, on the basis of the old paradigm, that we would like to save. We only like to get rid of all that which we don't like humanly. And this cannot be done. This is the difficult question in 1 Corinthians, that he could see that this is impossible. And that in order to really be able to resurrect ourselves, we have to watch carefully through the seven synonymous terminus, seven great subject, very carefully, that we really lay down the old sense so that the new can be brought forth within ourselves. That's what Corinthians is showing mostly. Then, what should we get in 2 Corinthians? This is interesting. What is the place value there? The place value as a point of intersection. Again, we have the same vertical, namely, again, the grace of God, that something is given to us as a gift of God in order to bring out the real man within us. But the attitude, the horizontal, is different. The horizontal says yes, but that is only possible if we remain steadfast in the new doctrine. Steadfastly abiding in the new doctrine. Persevering, so to say, in the new life. In other words, persevere in what you have seen in 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians has shown you what to lay down as the old man and what it brings about as a new man. Now persevere in that mode of life. And if you persevere, then you will meet a great struggle. You will meet opposition. And the struggle will come about, and he shows that inner struggle that comes about and says, but if you go on, you can be sure that you will triumph. That the triumph is won through steadfast adherence to 1 Corinthians. You see, you have a chain of scientific being. You have a category. It's categorical thinking where the elements in it, Romans, 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, are not just three independent links. They are a chain of links. They go into each other like this. They are not just separate links without being linked, really. I can say that way. So that here he shows, well, 2 Corinthians can only be fulfilled on the basis of 1 Corinthians, by being steadfast in it, and then you can find really that the power of triumph is really in God. And he's very hot on that. I think I would like to read that short passage which always impresses everybody. Or at least I think it impresses everybody, because it impresses me. He says here in Corinthians, just to show that he really was persevering and never gave in, he shows that he was in labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prison more frequent, in death often. Of the Jews 5 times received I 40 stripes, save one. Thrice was I beaten with rods, once was I stoned, thrice I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day I have been in the deep of the sea. In journeying often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils by mine own countrymen, in perils by the heathen, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and painfulness, in watching often, in hunger and thirst, in fasting often, in cold and nakedness. Without those things that are without, that which comes upon me daily, the care for all the churches. That was also one of his burdens. Can you see a world revolutionary, a world builder like Paul was? He couldn't have done it without giving the proof of his faith by going through all these tribulations. So we have to go through that and be willing to go through that. As we go on, we can even see that when we come to the next on that horizontal, to Philippians, that he even says, do that with joy. Go through those troubles with joy. Be joyful in it. But let's go back to 2 Corinthians so that don't get out of the rhythm. So he says, in those troubles, we have to be perseverant, because you can be sure of the final triumph, of the final triumph, because God is abundant in recompense and of glory. All trouble, he says, is only temporary. That's a good thing to remember. That trouble is only temporary. It seems one doesn't seem a way out, and so it seems as this would be without end. But trouble is always temporary. Suddenly, sometime in the tunnel, you see suddenly in far a little light, and you see, oh yes, there is a way out. And that light becomes bigger and bigger until finally you are out of the tunnel and in the fresh light. And everything then has changed. He says that Lord gives abundant recompense for every affliction. That again, that law of love that says that's not for nothing. You don't fight for nothing. There is a plan behind it. There is a meaning behind it. Life is meaningful. Life is not meaningless. You see, today people seem to think that life is meaningless, that there is no purpose in life. And so they get all that frustration of life because they can't see that there is meaning in suffering, that there is meaning in all these afflictions. And that God has a generous compensation. Very, very wonderful. Yes. That's 2 Corinthians. Then, if we go further down, we come to James. Yeah, we come to James. What is James? Well, James is not one of the 12 apostles. James was the stepbrother, one doesn't know quite definitely of Jesus. And he was a big shot in Jerusalem, in the mother church in Jerusalem for the Jewish Christian. And actually by birth he was Jew, and so he was the head of the mother church in Jerusalem. And he was the apostle of the Jews, whereas Paul, as you know, was the apostle of the Gentiles. And so he represented the Jewish element in the Christian church, because at that time, always Jews and Christians were together in a church, so it wasn't purely Christians or purely Jewish, it was always a mixture, but he represented a very high ethical standard in that Jewish Christian church. And he too was telling really something of the new faith. But he always could see something I think is important to see, namely that though Paul was running down the law by works, the works of the law, James said, yes, there must be works, but there must be works of faith. So he brings it really down and says, you have to work, you have to prove your faith through works. You don't have to prove the law through works, but you have to prove the faith through works. So that is his swan song here, really constantly, that we are justified by the works of faith. But the Jewish said, you are justified by the works of the law. But he turned it over to the Christian doctrine and says, you must prove yourself in your faith. That's why we have as a horizontal proving the new faith by living it. And that was James that was hot on this point and said, that's all right that God works through grace, but you can't leave it just at that, because that can be very dangerous. If you just leave it by that you say, well, God works through grace, so I don't have to do anything, then you actually will not reap the fruits. You will not have a new life. You must accept that grace of God and give the proof of that grace by working along with that grace, and give the proof of faith. That is his great theme here. So, counting it all joy when we fall in diverse temptation, but that gives us a chance to prove that we have faith. If we would never fall into temptation, or if we would never get into trouble, we could never prove what we have as our understanding. How can we prove that we understand God if we are never faced with a problem? Therefore, facing a problem, he would say, rejoice in it. Be glad that you can do it. This is an opportunity. This is an opportunity to prove what you understand. So don't be shocked if you encounter really resistance, but submit your life to the Word of God that has a saving power. That was his theme. And so we can see that now, though we started out with Romans, with that Christ translation, which says, sit back and just take in that God is doing all the work, we end up at the other end of the category and saying, yes, God is doing all the work, but you will never find for yourself the proof of it except you work with him. You work along with that. So prove yourselves in the work of faith. And that is then the end of the category. Yes? Now, I have shown you those four steps, and I go through them again twice at least. The first time, just to recapitulate what we have been saying about Romans and 1st and 2nd Corinthians and James, just to renew within ourselves the flow of that category. What I would like you to have, that you have inwardly the spiritual flow of that category, independent of the words that I say, or independent of the notes that you make. You must get the spiritual flow in it. And then afterwards, I will repeat again on another level. So let's first recap again. We start out with Christianity. That's the matrix. And that's a question of, at the point of manhood, Christianity. That all to do with man and the universe, with perfect man and perfect universe. So that whole subject starts out and says, if you want to have that, you have to go out from the Word, from the Father. That Father has a Christ. So you come to Romans, that gives us the cornerstone and says, look here, you have to give the Christ a chance. If you want to work out Christianity, you can't do it otherwise but to give the Christ a chance and not to sidestep the Christ. You must let the Christ come to you and tell you what to do and to give you the means and the channels and the tools for fulfilling your mission. Let the Christ come to you. So we begin to entertain in Romans first that sense of the Christ translation principle, which is at the center of everything, the authority of everything, the spiritual power of everything, that authority which says, I am well of life. I express myself and project myself in every way and kind and form. And that gives to man the fullness of his gestalt, the fullness of the form of man, the whole stature of man, so that man sees that he is the heir of God and co-heir of the Christ. For what purpose? For love. For the purpose that he plays the right part in the plan of love, in the plan of salvation, so that the Christ comes to everyone as the Son of God that takes a place, individual place, in the plan of love, fulfilling the individual plan, the individual place in the plan of love, and so he is integrated into the whole. And that will really transform man, and that will really strengthen man to act according to that Christ law. So that's Roman. And we have established within us first that it comes from God and that we don't have to do it. If it comes from God, we come to 1 Corinthians, which says, and if I see that for myself, and I see it for myself when I sit back in my easy chair and contemplate that Christ translation, then I take hold of it, then I entertain that Christ translation within my consciousness, then I claim it. That brings a new style of life within me. That's 1 Corinthians. And if I stick with that, I come to 2 Corinthians, and if I stick to that and never give in, I may encounter numberless difficulties and tribulation, but I will always be triumphant and victorious. I don't need to question that. I can trust that absolutely that I will be victorious and come out at the other end of the tunnel into the full light. But James says, that's fine, but you have to go along with it. You have to prove yourself in that faith. You can't just say that happened somewhere up on cloud nine. It happens right here where you are. Right there you have to give the living proof that that is your own being. So that we feel that it comes within us and that we are that very vertical there, that very Christ idea that comes to us as the grace of God. Yes? That's a repetition of the four. Now let's see it again and lift it just a little bit out of biblical context and bit higher to perhaps more abstract symbols where I can see what. What is it when I think in categories? Here I think in the category of the word vertical. And if I think in the category of the word vertical, I must go along the order of it from the beginning to the end. And all I do, if I reduce it furthermore, I get just one big impact of all those four together as one. Namely, I get that spiritual tonality of that whole category that says there is a Christ going on that comes to you and gives you a new style of life so that you will be victorious over the old man, and that will be your new life, your new being, if you stick to that. You can reduce that whole thing just to one common tone. And that, what I say, is categorical thinking. Then I have a one tone of that whole vertical. Just as when we are thinking about the synonymous terms, we can get the tone of mind, when we are thinking about the ideas of mind, what they are, how they interrelate, how they interact, what they are, and think about all the ideas of mind and think about it, question them, why do they, how are they combined, why do they mean the same, why are they under the category of mind, until finally you just have a tone called mind. And you know everything that is included in mind. That includes all the ideas of mind. And so we get to the tonality of the synonym. And in the same vein, we get to the tonality of a whole category here of the vertical. And if we go through the four verticals, we can even go further that I just have one tone, and that means Christianity, Christianity. And then I have everything included. What the epistles say here. Yes.